It is Friday, March 29th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we look forward to openings and new beginnings. Maxine's Tap Room, a longtime watering hole in Fayetteville, prepares to reopen under new management, and the farmers market prepares for its 40th season.
Also, Michael Tilley from the City Wire visits with us about business news in the region, as he does every week. And we have music from inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio and more. But first, the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce is backing a proposal to expand health insurance in the state by purchasing private coverage with federal Medicaid funds. The proposal is being considered as an alternative to the Medicaid expansion under the federal health care law. Meanwhile, former state Medicaid director Ray Hanley, who now heads a coalition of healthcare and business groups wanting some kind of expansion, says they're now supporting the private route.
I think if you do the private option, you're able to pay market premiums. The plans are able to pay market rates. I think you'll have a lot more doctors willing to give the patient appointments, see them in an appropriate setting. I think then the community hospitals will be paid appropriate market rates that Medicaid otherwise couldn't pay. The hospitals will be more viable. Access will be better.
Hanley also said in an interview with Talk Business Arkansas that he believes the private option is the only way to get the 3/4 votes needed in the legislature to get a bill passed.
The Arkansas House has approved bills that would prevent employers and colleges from asking for employees or students to hand over their passwords for social media accounts like Facebook and Twitter. Democratic Representative Nate Steele of Nashville sponsored the two bills, which each got unanimous support.
This is part of a few bill package that basically is just aimed to keep our law up with technology. This stuff is moving fast, and this will help protect people against unreasonable searches by their employers or their universities.
Steele says the bills would not impact the ability of law enforcement to access such information.
In the upcoming fiscal year, Arkansas will receive about $26 million in funds from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Officials with the Arkansas Economic Development Commission say they want the public's opinion on how to best allocate the funds. Spokesman Scott Harding says there are 5 public hearings that they are holding.
Right now we have a draft plan, but we are holding these around the state to ensure that the public has a chance to give us ideas or talk about what's of most importance to them. The $26 million will be distributed through 4 programs. That's the Community Development Block Grant Program, the Home Investment Partnership, Emergency Solutions Grants, and lastly, the Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS.
One such meeting was held this morning in Siloam Springs, but 3 more will be held in the coming weeks in North Little Rock, Paragould, and McGee. For more information, ArkansasAEDC.com.
Construction of the roundabout in North Fayetteville will undergo asphalt overlay work in the coming days, weather permitting, of course. In addition to affecting traffic on the roundabout, street traffic will also be affected on Futrell Drive, Millsap Road, the off-ramp of the Fulbright Expressway, and a portion of North Hills Boulevard. After overlay work is complete, crews will work on paving the central island of the roundabout, at which point the roundabout will be closed to traffic. But access to Washington Regional Medical Center will remain available through construction.
The Jones Center in Springdale has added a new feature to its website. With the simple click of a button, any page of the site can be translated into Spanish. Look for the Google Translate button at the top left corner of the website. Jones Center President and CEO Ed Clifford reportedly says that the new feature is critical for continued growth of the center and that diversity is important to the center, as Jones Center officials pride themselves on being a place to bridge cultures.
The University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has received 100,000 reasons to thank one of its own. This week, the university received a $100,000 bequest from Joanna and Richard Hudson. Richard is the university's vice chancellor for government and community relations. He started his stint with the university in 1994 and serves as the university's lobbyist to the Arkansas legislature. The gift will provide unrestricted funding to the university's areas of greatest need.
According to new figures from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics, employment in Washington County is increasing at one of the fastest rates in the country. In terms of increase in employment between September of 2011 and 2012, employment increased by 3.8%, ranking at 10th in the nation in the percent of employment growth. The national employment growth rate for the same period was 1.6%. But in terms of raw numbers of employment gains, Los Angeles County, California, topped the list, adding nearly 82,000 jobs over the course of the year.
In other employment news, new figures released this morning show that Arkansas's unemployment rate is holding steady. The numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics show the state's jobless rate at 7.2% in February, the same as it was in January, and only 1/10 of a percentage point lower than it was in February 2012. The numbers show that almost 96,000 residents were unemployed as of February, lower than the more than 100,000 residents unemployed a year ago. Today is Good Friday, and offices at the City of Fort Smith are closed in observance of the holiday. However, sanitation pickup services are running as regularly scheduled.
Tonight's forecast calls for a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms in northwest Arkansas, 70% in the Arkansas River Valley, overnight lows in the mid to upper 50s. Tomorrow, Saturday, a 70% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 66 in northwest Arkansas, 80% of showers and thunderstorms and a high near 70 in the Arkansas River Valley. Saturday night, a 50% chance for showers and thunderstorms with lows from 51 to 55 degrees.
Joining me now on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, and culture for the entire KUAF listening area. Hello, sir.
Good morning. Good Friday morning.
How are you doing today?
So far, so good. I'm not as wet as you guys are, though.
Yes, lots of rain here. Maybe the River Valley will get some of that as well. Speaking of the River Valley, I understand that you have some numbers for me about the sales tax collections in Fort Smith.
Right. We could, in the Fort Smith area, could use some of those numbers going back up. Sales tax revenue in Fort Smith is on a four-month decline, and it's not the way city leaders wanted to start off 2013. The February report, for the first two reporting months of 2013, the city's two 1% sales taxes are down almost 6%. And its share, the city share of the countywide 1% tax, is down, it's down almost 7%. It's down, I'll get this right, a little over 5% for the first 2 months, and it's down almost 8% compared to what they had estimated. So, and that 1% countywide tax is important because that goes into their general fund. So they, Kara Bushkill, the city finance director told me yesterday that they have asked their department heads to start looking for 4% across the board cuts for any programs that are funded by their general fund. Mm. They'll present those, I think, to the board April 9th, April 2nd. It'll be sometime in April. So, it's just not looking good for the revenue. This is, this is a function of this persistent high unemployment.
Right.
In the Fort Smith region is one of the factors. So when you continue to have so many people out of work or people concerned about their jobs, they tend to spend less, and that is reflected. That's reflected in these numbers. And what's interesting is the number of unemployed in the Fort Smith metro area during January was 11,480. Now, the monthly average for unemployed in 2011 was 11,413. The monthly average in 2010 was 11,156. Mm-hmm. In 2009, it was 10,091. That gives you a sense of, and before that, in 2009, the monthly average would be tops maybe 7,000. So you can see we've been ranging 3,000 to 4,000 people more a month on average that have been unemployed for the past 4 years. So that's a clear sign of what's troubling the sales tax collections in the Fort Smith area.
Well, here in northwest Arkansas, some more numbers. The residential construction sector is looking better.
Right. You know, we 6-7 years ago, the problem in northwest Arkansas was, you know, anyone who could pick up a hammer was a contractor, and they were building a home somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up with a little bit of a bubble, and it's taken a few years for that to clear out. But I think what we're seeing in Northwest Arkansas. In February, for example, among Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, and Bentonville, for residential permits, there were 30.8 million in permits issued. A year ago this time, it was just 21.6 million. So what we're seeing is kind of a gradual rise, and I think that's what builders and bankers in Northwest Arkansas want to see. They don't want to see just everybody again building homes. They want to stay pretty. They want the supply to stay pretty much in touch with demand. And we've talked to some bankers who say that's they're very keen on making sure they don't get overbuilt. Again, we talked with a gentleman named Kent Williamson. He's a loan manager with Arvest there in Springdale, and he said many times during an interview, he said, everyone is he used the term thoughtful approach. Everyone's taking a thoughtful approach to what they build, where they build it, value of the home, and that type of thing. So, but the good news there is I think we're starting to see a return to normalcy, let's hope. I hope I'm not overstating it, but that the residential building sector and even the home sales sector in Northwest Arkansas is the numbers we saw last year that they were improving, I think we can now say it's a trending rebound. So let's keep our fingers crossed on that.
Fingers crossed for sure. Now, in the River Valley this week, I understand you had a bit of a movie star visiting, or at least somebody who inspired a Julia Roberts movie.
Right. The Erin Brockovich. Not Julia Roberts.
Not Julia Roberts.
Right. But the Erin Brockovich came to town and drew quite a crowd, not so much because she's Erin Brockovich, but because there are hundreds of people in Fort Smith who are concerned about this pollution that Whirlpool has left behind. And the backstory is Whirlpool used this in a lot of industry. A lot of manufacturers have used this over the years. It's called TCE, and it's essentially an industrial solvent. But it's also a carcinogen, and it's a real nasty little chemical, and it even breaks down into vinyl chloride and some other things that are even worse. And so it is in the water table around the manufacturing plant in Fort Smith. And so Whirlpool wanted the city board to pass this groundwater well ban. And the board almost did it, but I think, not cooler heads, but some folks backed up and said, okay, what's really going on? Let's get some more info. Some residents were upset. Residents didn't think they were getting straight answers out of Whirlpool or the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality or the city of Fort Smith. And this one resident, Debbie Keith, was so persistent, she got the attention of Erin Brockovich. So Brockovich and her firm came in, and they had some pretty damning things to say about Whirlpool and the possible pollution and how it's been treated or not been treated. And so, Antoinette, I think we're going to see a lot more out of this. Erin and her consultant, the guy who heads up her firm, both said they think this is far worse than what Whirlpool or ADEQ is letting on, and they're going to stay and they're going to investigate. So,
wow.
Yeah, this is going to get more interesting as a story.
Well, we will continue to follow that. And another story we've been continuing to follow is the Marshall's Museum that's hoping to open in Fort Smith, and right now they're in the fundraising phase of that whole project, but they've set a groundbreaking date.
Yes, they've set a very aggressive schedule for themselves. We'll be watching this closely too, just to see. We hope they're, we hope they're on target, because we would love to see this museum built.
But sure.
September 24th, 2014, is the 225th anniversary of the Marshall Service. So they are hoping to be able to have raised another $20-25 million, somewhere around there. That's not the exact, but that's going to be pretty close. So they can break ground and start building. And let's hope when they break ground, they start building, and that the groundbreaking is not just some kind of hollow ceremony. But
sure.
The president of the museum, Jim Dunn, talked about the goal. They recognize it's aggressive, and they've hired a fundraiser consultant who's talked about some of the challenges. But so they have a little over a year now to keep ginning up. And the number I just found, it is $29.2 million, is still needed to fully fund the museum. So they have a big task on their hands, but let's hope in a couple of years, we'll see steel coming out of the ground here in downtown on the riverfront in Fort Smith for a Marshall's Museum.
Well, if they're anything like me, having a deadline is exactly what I need to actually get motivated to do the thing. So maybe by setting this deadline.
Right. Yeah, that is a hard wall. And, there was some criticism of them setting the deadline, that you shouldn't box yourself in. But to some extent, I kind of appreciate the fact that they did that for the reason you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it does. You know, here we go.
It
puts everybody
you.
On notice.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hope. We'll keep our fingers crossed on that one also.
All right. Well, we'll keep paying attention to these stories as they continue to develop.
Right.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire, which covers business, politics, and culture for the entire KUAF listening area. Michael, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
There are many staple watering holes in the area that have survived the test of time. Rogers Rack and George's on Dixon Street in Fayetteville have both gone through some changes, but they're still there. And Chelsea's in Eureka Springs is a place you can always count on. Maxine's Tap Room in Fayetteville is one of those places. It's been around for over 60 years. Opened in 1950 by Maxine, it didn't move to its current location on Block Street until the 1960s, but that's still quite a while. When Maxine passed away in 2006, her family took over the business, but a fire in 2007 put them back a bit. On April Fool's Day, Monday, Maxine's will reopen once again. It's undergone a bit of a facelift, and a new management team is in place, but residents and patrons rest assured that it will maintain its historical charm. Local small business owner Hannah Withers is one of four who are remodeling and reopening Maxine's.
It's tricky to sort of try and revitalize a place that has so many stories and legends. I mean, Maxine was a Fayetteville icon, and everybody has a story about her. She was in this bar for 60 years, sitting in her stool from open to close every day that it was here, and she was a character. She was cantankerous. And
Andrea Foran is just one of many that has memories of this place. Maxine was her great aunt.
Growing up, if you wanted to see Maxine, we didn't go to her house. We went to the tap room. I mean, I remember going there when I was 4 years old playing the ding-ding, and Maxine would boot all the frat guys off because the kids had came into play, me and my cousins and stuff. And so, I mean, it's just always, it was different back then, though, too, with kids being in bars and everything. But I just always grew up going in there, and it's just always been a part of not only my life, but my whole family's life.
Though Maxine's will remain in the family, the name, business, and building have been leased to Hannah, her husband Ben, and longtime friends and fellow small business owners, Rebecca and Matt Champagne. Rebecca has a few memories of her own.
Sure, I do. I don't know if I want to share them. I moved to Fayetteville when I was 21, so that was prime, having a beer at Maxine's age. And this was a favorite of some friends of mine back in the day. But I remember it always being really smoky, and so I always remember I would come in for a PBR and have about enough. So the fact that it's non-smoking now, I'm actually pretty excited about it. I think that I personally would spend more time in here.
No worries for smokers. They plan to build a back porch in the coming weeks for smokers and non alike. Running a business is hard work. Running a lasting business is even harder work. I asked Andrea why she thinks Maxine's has survived for over 60 years.
For so many years, it was her. It was Maxine. I mean, Maxine is what, for years and years, what brought people there. I remember whenever Maxine got kind of sick, down in her later years, and stopped being at the bar every night, people would literally poke their head in, not see her on her stool, and leave. So for years, it was just Maxine. It was her characters, her personality. It was the atmosphere that was created by her being there. It wasn't somewhere that people could get out of hand or act unruly and it would be tolerated. She had a very, just a way and persona that she wanted the bar to be. And it was that 100% with her there.
She saw something in Hannah, Rebecca, and their team that made her confident that they would carry on the good name of Maxine while maintaining a successful business. They own Little Bread Company and Terra Tots, respectively. Andrea saw their drive and their passion for Block Street.
Anybody that knows Hannah and knows what she has done for Block Street and the businesses on Block Street, her enthusiasm is contagious. I mean, she is so excited, her and Rebecca both, to see their excitement and for them to walk in Maxine's and see potential that I've seen for so many years, but I'm not personally in a position to be able to do those things, for that team of people to come in and see all that potential and have the drive and energy and time to do it was really just what, it's just a good fit for them and it's a good fit for us.
Hannah and her husband Ben like to put on their potential glasses when they go into local businesses that have been around for a while. They look around and dream about what they would do with a place if it was theirs. They did this while cooling off in Maxine's last summer.
So I think at block party last year, Ben and I sat down and he kept saying, is that a skylight in the ceiling? Why are they hiding the skylight? I mean, what's underneath all these popcorn ceilings? And Ben's the dreamer in our relationship. I'm a little bit more of the executor that makes those dreams sort of morph into a reality. But
the popcorn ceilings are gone. The skylight has been opened up, letting in some natural light. The Formica bar has been turned into copper. Rebecca's husband owns Hammer and Chisel and has been doing all the work along with Ben. The bathrooms have new fixtures, wallpaper. But they do intend to maintain the history of the building. Andrea and her family have saved everything over the years and have allowed Hannah and her team access.
And so we have photographs of the original building in 1950. We have pictures of Maxine standing on block with her sister in her pillbox hat and 1950s pearls and the ding ding machine.
A picture of Maxine's first bartender already hangs on the wall, as does her stool, red vinyl with her name embroidered in black. Maxine's picture hangs on the door of the women's restroom. And a deer head that's been around for decades will hang over a round red booth in a front corner. The ding ding machine is currently under repair, which has been difficult. I didn't know what a ding ding machine was, so I asked Andrea, Maxine's great niece, what it is.
It's such an iconic thing for Maxine. It's because it was always a part. I mean, from 1950 until it was taken out in probably 2006, around in there, it was always in there. Like I said, I remember being 4 years old and playing the ding ding. People who don't know what it is, I mean, it was about a 12-foot bowling alley with a marble-looking miniature bowling ball with actual pins that were in it. The original one that was in there back in the 50s had like some magnetic strips that the ball activated the pins, but these are actual pins on strings. So back for so many years, so many people remember that experience. I mean, I can still hear the sound in my head if I think about it.
A ding ding.
Ding ding, you know. And I mean, you could fit up to six people, and it was just a great thing.
To honor the ding ding machine, there will be a cocktail called the ding ding with champagne, vodka, a sugar cube, and bitters. The bar will serve vintage cocktails, modeled after the time the bar originally opened, including Hannah's own favorite, the Moscow Mule, which will be served in the traditional copper mug. Mixers will be made in-house, and the beers on tap will be primarily local brews, trying to meet the demands of the new community, while paying respect to Maxine. Rebecca says that every change that they've made is with Maxine in mind.
We think, what would Maxine think of these lights? What would she think of this paint? And we really are trying to honor her and her spirit. Just like Hannah was saying, she was a tough woman, she was a shrewd and smart woman, and so all the changes that we're making are definitely with her in mind, and her memory in mind.
Maxine was a good businesswoman, and they think she would approve of the changes. Rebecca says that the bar needs to transform, just as Fayetteville has. Her Fayetteville has changed. She came young and single, now has a family. When we spoke, she held two-week-old Beatrix in her arms. But that doesn't mean she doesn't want to go out, socialize, have a drink.
We wanted something that kind of appeals to people that, like me, were 21 in Fayetteville. We did the Dixon Street scene, we did the music scene, and now here we are a little bit older. Maybe we don't need to be out on Dixon till 2 in the morning, but we still want to have a place where we can go and have a nice fancy drink and not have to necessarily deal with the college crowd on Dixon Street. So to me, I don't know, maybe it's Fayetteville's kind of growing up with the people that are growing up within it. That's just kind of what it feels like.
After the grand opening Monday, April Fool's Day, no joke, Maxine's will be open Tuesday through Saturday from 4 p.m. until 2 a.m. For more information, search Facebook for Maxine's Tap Room. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
KUAF Spring On Air Fundraiser begins Monday, April 1st, and we're looking for some challenges. This is KUAF Station Manager Rick Stockdale, and you can help us encourage listeners who have never contributed to KUAF before by contacting us today with your challenge grant. Call or email us with your name and the amount of your challenge. Then when the fundraiser starts on April 1st, we'll use your challenge to match the gifts of first-time donors. They'll be doubling their money to KUAF, and you can help us reach our goal of $160,000. If you'd like to make a challenge, call Molly at 575-7259 or email us at kuafinfo@uark.edu. Thanks a lot.
It is Friday, March 29th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
So it's Easter weekend.
It is.
And I suspect that on the surface, John Rankin's art installation seems pretty irreverent.
You're going to have to tell me more about this because I don't.
Okay. John Rankin is a Eureka Springs artist. He's a photographer, but he also does art things with mannequins and doll heads. And so he's done this installation called Graven Images.
Okay.
And it includes Easter bunnies and lighted Santas and unicorns and snowmen and angels. He's been collecting these for the past year. They kept showing up in the antique shop he owns in Eureka Springs. And I kept going to Eureka Springs and going, why? Well, it's an exhibit that he says examines man's innate need to create icons and the cultural effects of modern-day idolatry in society by exploring the spiritual, emotional, and commercial responses evoked by these archetypal motifs.
So, like, the Easter Bunny really has nothing to do with the
overarching
purpose of Easter.
But there's a bunny there, right, and some angels. And everything he did was secondhand or yard sale or flea market, except for the gold paint. I think it's going to be a really interesting installation.
So is it one big piece, or there are multiple pieces in this?
Multiple pieces.
Multiple art pieces.
Multiple art pieces.
Okay.
Yes.
Make up one exhibit.
Yes.
Thank you.
Where is this?
It opens tonight from 5 to 9 at The Space, which is above Sweet Spring Antiques in Eureka at 2 Pine Street. And then it will be opened this weekend. It's 5 to 9 today, 11 to 7 tomorrow, and 11 to 7 on Sunday. Admission is free, and it should be fascinating.
Sounds like it.
Now, along more traditional lines, there are a lot of Easter events left for little people. There's an Easter egg hunt tomorrow at 10 o'clock, hosted by the Bella Vista Property Owners Association at Reardon Hall. There's an Easter egg hunt at 10 o'clock at Centerton City Park. One at 11 o'clock at Horton Farms west of Centerton. An extravaganza art event at the Community Creative Center tomorrow from 10:30 to noon. You can bring your own eggs. And the Community Creative Center and their staff and board and volunteers will help the kids dye them and do interesting things to them.
So they need to be hard-boiled before you bring them in?
One would assume.
Yeah. Okay.
Or interesting things could happen.
Yes. So
it costs
$8,
which for $8 and not having it happen in your kitchen,
that's worth
it. Not a bad deal.
Oh, yeah.
Not a bad idea.
There's a children's Easter event at 11 tomorrow at Word of Life Fellowship in Bentonville. The annual egg hunt at Withrow Springs State Park is tomorrow at 11. The Easter Bunny is still at the Northwest Arkansas Mall. Tomorrow's the last day. There's an Easter Bells Parade in Eureka Springs at noon. It honors the tradition of Easter parades with hats and outfits and,
of course,
lavishness. There's an egg hunt at 1:30 at, well, near the Food Pavilion in the Malco Theater at Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. Egg decorating at 2 at the Springdale Public Library, and an egg hunt at 2 at Gentry City Park.
So plenty of egg entertainment this weekend.
Lots of excitement.
Well done.
Also this weekend, Goodbye Charlie opens at Rogers Little Theater.
Remind me what this play is about, please. It's a comedy.
1959 comedy. Charlie is a cat, a womanizer, not a nice person.
Of course.
Charlie dies and is reincarnated as a woman.
Oh, okay.
The kind of woman Charlie would have hit on.
Okay.
Imagine his surprise. And therein lies the comedy. Showtime is 8 today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday. It's $16 for the balcony, $45 if you'd like a meal. And Circa performs tonight, or Saturday rather, at 8 o'clock at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. If you need a little circus for your weekend.
Sold out, last I heard.
The Circa?
Uh-huh.
So check on that.
Because sometimes they have a waiting list. People turn tickets back. So show up early maybe and check in with the box office. So I was sad to hear that sold out. I mean, I'm glad that it sold out, you know, that it was received so well. But a little sad because I enjoy when they bring the different kinds of circuses through town.
Have you heard about the pet circus yet?
I have.
And my goal, I was telling Jody with the Walton Arts Center, I really want to bring some of these pets in.
Oh, it'd be fun.
I know.
I talked to him. His name's Gregory Popovich.
Right.
Normally in Las Vegas. They'll be here next weekend at the Walton Arts Center. It's called Popovich Comedy Pet Theater. Mm-hmm. And all of the animals he uses are rescues. Mm-hmm. And most of them are cats.
Oh, most of them are cats. Okay, I hadn't heard that.
How do you train a cat?
I don't know.
You don't. It trains you.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
He says every cat has a trick in it.
Uh-huh.
And you just have to find the trick.
Okay. Well, I'm bringing him in next week.
Okay.
Meowing and barking. It'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to this.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. On the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will pay tribute to some of the great artists who will be performing with the Monterey Jazz 55 tour that will be appearing at the Walton Arts Center. We'll hear from Benny Green and from Christian McBride, Chris Potter, Dee Dee Bridgewater. And also on the show, we'll hear from McCoy Tyner, William Gallison, Andre Memari, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, and much, much more. Tune in this Friday night at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
Nonprofit Merlin Foundation, now in its 20th year of operation, assists children victimized by physical or sexual abuse living across a 6-county region in North Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich brings us their story.
Merlin Leach retired to the Ozarks in 1992 to Southern Carroll County from Los Angeles after a long career helping children suffering with cancer. He envisioned building a retreat center for families who've lost a child to catastrophic illness. He has a PhD in degenerative diseases and worked in behavioral medicine for many years, also assisting families struggling with illness and domestic abuse. But when local law enforcement and the county judiciary learned about Merlin Leach's skill set, they tapped him to assist children trapped in impossible circumstances.
There were no services whatsoever for child abuse, domestic violence, or rape, meaning adult rape. And would I get something started?
Not only did Merlin Leach get something started, he drew attention to a critical need. Over the next decade, the Merlin Foundation let go of full family advocacy work, leaving that to new agencies which blossomed around the region in order to focus strictly on children rescued from sexual assault and domestic violence situations.
Originally it was funded by my wife and I, but I think our first year's donations were like $2,500 or something, which hardly gets anything going. But we're public funded. We apply for grants, but our big support, we have to say thank you, Walton family, Walmart, and the whole crowd, Arvest Bank, everything with a Walton name on it. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't have got here. We wouldn't be here.
According to the records on file with the Arkansas Attorney General's office, monetary grants, gifts, and contributions have fluctuated over the years to the Merlin Foundation, between $90,000 to $200,000 annually, most of it public support. Yet, the foundation accomplishes so much with so little. For example, staff are on call 24/7 to assess traumatized children taken into police custody. Michelle Steiner, a licensed practical nurse and executive director of the Merlin Foundation, serves as a forensic interviewer.
A forensic interview is where a child who has allegations of maltreatment is talked to in a very developmental and a fact-finding manner about what they may have experienced. My training enables me to be able to talk to children in a way that is developmentally sensitive and non-intimidating, just to be able to help them through that process.
Following a strict protocol to build rapport and assess a child's ability, Steiner is able to gather information for community partners investigating the case. For example, local police, domestic violence agencies, or the County Department of Human Services. Medical and psychiatric providers may also pitch in. The children are not interviewed in a holding area by big men in dark uniforms at the county jail. Rather, they're transported to a place called Grandma's House in Green Forest, where Michelle Steiner, using toys and games and play therapy, coaxes critical case information from the children.
And part of that process as well is establishing a common language with identifying body parts. And then we talk about touches that they like to get and touches that they don't like to get. And from there, there's a process in which if there's an abuse which has been disclosed from the child at that time, then we'll go in and help that child to be able to talk about what they've experienced just in a very fact-finding manner. And then at the end of the interview, we will, what we call a respectful closure, you know, helping the child and educating them whether they have made a disclosure or have not made a disclosure, who they could talk to if something has or does happen to them, you know, who they can safely tell.
Because most of these children don't end up in state care, they're returned to their family of origin, whose members also go through intervention. Authorities believe removing children from family homes is only a last resort. Grandma's House is one of six children's advocacy centers in Arkansas operating in compliance with the standards of the National Children's Alliance and the state serving abused and neglected children. And despite the name, Grandma's House, the work inside is extremely intense, with most cases involving some form of sexual abuse.
It is intense work, and, you know, for me, we get to work with some of the most wonderful people in the world, and most of them are short, you know, just to be able to help them through that process, you know, it's so rewarding, and, you know, in their own way, they give back to us, you know, just the same as we would to them.
More than 800 children and family members were helped in 2011 by the Merlin Foundation. Now, Merlin Leach, he stepped down from the foundation 4 years ago to attempt retirement once again. And the presence of the Merlin Foundation in the six-county region has helped quell domestic violence and abuse in the community, Leach says.
In the very beginning, the very first year we started at, 94, in Carroll County, we had 150-some-odd cases went through that multidisciplinary team. We had no CAC in those days. We probably don't see 100 cases a year now in Carroll County.
But like every nonprofit community service organization these days, the Merlin Foundation needs financial help to meet its mission. To that end, a group of Carroll County women are throwing a big party, a Goddess Gala, April 2nd, a Tuesday night in downtown Eureka Springs at the Basin Park Hotel to benefit Merlin Leach, his staff, the foundation, and the children. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
More information is available at goddessgala.com and merlinfoundation.com.
We've changed seasons and winter is in the rearview mirror, but the Winter Farmers Market is going to hang on for one more weekend. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently spoke to Teresa Maurer and Lori Boatwright, two managers of the Fayetteville Farmers Market, about what to expect from the market in the coming weeks.
Tomorrow, March the 30th, is the last winter market for the Fayetteville Farmers Market at the Botanical Garden. That's in the big white tent just south of the garden. Those hours are 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. There's going to be lots of vendors there. We have flowers now, cut flowers as well as plants, in addition to all the things that we've had all winter, and our spring produce is coming in, and we're going to just have, I think, a great variety tomorrow. The other thing that's sort of the last Saturday for is we have been matching the SNAP benefits.
Right.
Yes. And the way this works is that those of you who have SNAP benefits with the card, swipe the card for any amount, and we match $20 in tokens, which can be spent at the market. And we're encouraging everybody to get those tokens. They essentially, after March 30th, we do not have that match anymore, and we're asking people to go ahead and come and get them and spend them that day. There's going to be a lot of wonderful things to spend those tokens on.
And to refresh our memories, it's a 2-for-1, basically.
Well, it kind of is, but I mean, that's good if you're, if I swipe for $20, mm-hmm. then if you swipe, you're the customer, right. and you swipe for $20, then I will give you your 20 regular tokens right. and 20 in a special match. You could also have swiped for 50, but I can only give you 20.
Right.
So it's not quite doubling, but no matter what, you walk away with more tokens
right.
than you would have gotten
20 more,
before.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
And this is Easter weekend?
It is Easter weekend, so that's why we're especially encouraging people to come out. Great variety, like I said. And there's other holidays being celebrated around this time of year.
That's true.
And you might want to come to the market and get some special food, some flowers, some plants to, you know, start thinking about the garden and all those things, because it's been so cold. People have, you know, been kind of wanting to
right.
garden but not quite there yet, or wanting that produce, and now it's finally coming in.
Now, Lori, the square, it's been dormant for a bit. That's how it works. But coming up on Saturday the 6th.
Saturday, April 6th, opening day for our 40th season. Fayetteville Farmers Market.
That sounds odd when you say it.
I know. But we're really excited for a new season. And, yeah, so we'll open up on the square April 6th from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. And all your favorite vendors will be there, and maybe some new ones, too.
And all the ambiance and atmosphere that comes with the Farmers Market on the square.
Definitely. We're ready, too. People are getting excited and some special things planned. We'll have an opening day ceremony at 9 a.m. in Town Center Plaza. The mayor will speak and have a couple of other things going on. And opening day.
And it's fitting that opening day is Saturday, because I think, you know, Saturday is still the biggest day. But then Tuesday, which on my calendar is the 9th, right?
Tuesday the 9th? Yes, Tuesday the 9th.
The beginning of the weekday markets.
The weekday markets, which on the square are Tuesday and Thursday from 7 a.m. till 1 p.m. And, you know, same vendors. We accept SNAP benefits during those markets as well. And looking forward to a great season.
Teresa, just because the winter market at the Botanical Gardens is over doesn't mean the market at the gardens is done.
That's correct. We are delighted to be able to announce that market, the Fayetteville Farmers Market at the Botanical Garden, will continue. But we have to retrain you because the hours are changing.
Okay.
So it will be starting on April the 6th also. So the square will be open and the Fayetteville Market at the Botanical Garden will be open starting at 7 a.m. and going until noon, because the Botanical Garden has events in the afternoon.
Right.
So we need to be out of there by noon. So we need to – everybody click when you click over to April and you're thinking about the Fayetteville Market at the Botanical Garden, 7 a.m. till noon.
Okay. And then – okay. And the Wednesday market's coming up.
That's it. And that is brand new.
Brand new.
Brand new, yes. We have had a lot of demand for an evening market. And so we are opening at the Fayetteville Farmers Market at the Botanical Garden an evening market from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Wednesday. And that first Wednesday market will be on Wednesday, April the 10th. So, you know, we've got the opening day at both the square and the Botanical Garden, and then we have the Tuesday and Thursday markets opening on the square. But Wednesday evening at the Botanical Garden will be a new opportunity for people to shop. So if you're going by on Crossover Road, it'll be in the big white tent again and outside when we have lots of vendors there, and you can do some midweek shopping there. And we are just really excited to bring this back, because we had an evening market a few years back, and I think this location is going to be a lot easier as far as parking and, you know, visibility.
And no Sunday market now.
No Sunday market. That's correct. Right. And that is something part of this retraining. So people are going to really think about Saturday as the shopping day, whether you're at the Botanical Garden or the square. And Sunday is an off day, essentially a day of rest.
A day of rest.
For everybody from the markets. And then if you just cannot wait till the weekend, you've got that Wednesday evening market as a brand new thing out there.
Okay. So let's see how well, Lori, I am at being retrained. Tomorrow, last winter's market at the Botanical Gardens. The times we're used to.
10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
10 to 2. Saturday the 6th. The farmer's market on the square returns.
Returns 7 a.m. to 2 p.m.
To 2 p.m. Then Wednesday. No, then Tuesday the 9th. See, I'm getting there. Tuesday the 9th, we start the weekday, the Tuesday-Thursday schedule on the square.
7 a.m. to 1 p.m.
However, we also have the botanical garden markets on Saturday and Wednesday.
Exactly. Saturday from 7 a.m. till noon, Wednesday evening, afternoon evening from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Five markets every week.
Every week. And if that gets confusing, you get lost, all of those days and times are on the website, yeah. Which is FayettevilleFarmersMarket.org. Find us on Facebook, Fayetteville, Arkansas Farmers Market. We are trying to put that information out there everywhere we can. So come see us.
Okay. And then in a couple of weeks, let's talk again. And because I do know you have the other special days that start to line up as we get in further into spring.
Very much so.
That's exactly
and we'll have
right.
Some special events and, you know, maybe even a market birthday party coming down the line. So.
Oh, it's a big one. Any
big
of those
one
with
is.
A zero is big, right?
40.
Yeah, 40. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Lori Boatwright, Teresa Maurer, thank you both very much.
Thank you,
Kyle.
Trampled Underfoot is a band comprised of siblings Chris, Nick, and Danielle Schneblin. The Kansas City group won the International Blues Challenge in 2008 and are working on a new album. Recently, they stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk with Paul Kelso, host of the Generic Blues Show. While they were here, they performed a couple of songs, including this one called Don't Think Twice, It's All Right.
Well, there ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. By now. And it ain't no use to sit and wonder why, babe. It'll never do somehow. When your rooster crows at the break of dawn, look out your window, babe. Oh, and I'll be gone. Oh, so long, so long. say farewell. Well, I ain't saying you treated me unkind. You could have done better, better, Bill. Oh, but I don't mind. No, you wasted, wasted, wasted my precious time. And don't think twice, it's all right.
That was Trampled Underfoot performing Don't Think Twice, It's All Right, inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They recently stopped by the studio to talk with Paul Kelso, the host of the Generic Blues Show, which can be heard every Friday night at 9 here on KUAF. More information about the band is available at tufkc.com.
What makes a desert? It's more than just a lack of water. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at the lush life of deserts and the secret lives of the cacti, Gila monsters, and even the microbes that live there. Plus, looking ahead to a comet crash on Mars. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
Talk of the Nation, Science Friday, just ahead at 1 o'clock here on KUAF, 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Avoca.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. KUAF is proud to co-sponsor the 2013 Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure. This 5 and 10K race plus 1 mile family walk will be held Saturday, April 27th at Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. A pre-race pasta party will be held Friday, April 26th. Race forms, pasta tickets, and more information available at komenozark.org or 750-PINK.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that this week was quiet, but quieter probably compared to next week, because we begin our on-air fundraiser on Monday.
On Monday, and we will go for 10 days.
Yes.
So we will be, along with other voices from the station, we will be live all day asking you guys to help with the station and continue your support of KUAF and public radio. So look forward to that on Monday. Of course, it is Easter weekend. Do you have big plans, Christina?
Not really.
Right?
I mean, there really isn't a lot going on this weekend because it is Easter weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I think it's supposed to rain, so stay inside. And
I know, maybe just be lazy and kind of watch some movies or something.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know what that means for all of the
egg hunts
that Becca mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because a lot of them are outside, so I don't know.
I don't know. I guess she'll just have to check their respective websites.
And I think so, and contact and make sure that they're still on. Some may have rain
checks.
Yeah, they have rain checks. Yes, rain checks. Or options for if it rains.
Right.
Okay. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening. Tune in at 9 on Sunday for Weekend Ozarks. We will both be back for that.
We will be both here. Yeah.
And then we will be back on Monday for Ozarks at Large at noon.
Yep. All right. Well, have a good Friday.